What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Overstated NBA Show. We got the three OGs with us today. No, that does not include somebody from Europe. It is myself, Brett, and producer Mikey. What the hell is up, guys? It has been a minute, about 2 weeks since we have all three of us have been together. Brett, how the heck are you doing, man?
Doing great, man. I appreciate you asking.
I saw that you were at a game last night.
I finally made it to a Wizards game. It's my first season. My first one since moving here. My first one in probably like 10 years, I think, was the last time. Just when I was visiting, I went to one. So it was good to be back. And it was a fun game. Had a good time. You know, like, you can't go wrong with an NBA game with decent seats. But I had a great time. It was fun.
I liked it, man. I liked it. And I love that you were still at the game, still tweeting out NBA clips, man. You are a machine, dude. You are like the Cal Ripken Jr. of fucking Twitter, man. You are amazing.
It's like a reflex now, man. Like, I'm like sitting there, see this amazing pass in person. I go right to my phone to go clip it. So, yeah, that's just like a reflex right there. That was probably unnecessary, but hey.
I love it. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I just to edit something that you said a little bit ago, I am very European. I might not be in Europe, but not to be confused with the other guy you're talking about, I am a very European person. So just let the record show, I am full-blooded European.
I hear you, man. And us Italians after Monday night, dude, and just to cross sport a little bit here, the NFL, dude, we're making a comeback over here. We got we're doing big things. But here, cheers, everybody. I got my shot of tequila here.
Cheers.
Oh, beautiful. All right. So today we got a good show for everybody. We are going to talk about one of the most hilarious nights on NBA Twitter that I have seen in quite some time. I think it is up there for top five. We're going to talk a little bit about Draymond Green. We're going to do our quarter season MVPs. And if we can, we might actually get into some Washington Wizards talk. RIP to Brett actually going to Washington games in the next couple of years. He better get them all in. But if you have time, we'll definitely hit that at the end. So I think we got to start with what happened last night. It is one of the most bizarre and one of the funniest things that I have seen in quite some time. For those of you that don't know, we have Ballgate. The Indiana Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks met for the third time. Indiana won the last two games, but Giannis has been dominant. Giannis played 37 minutes last night, had 64 points, was 20 for 28 from the field, did not make a three-pointer, was 24 for 32 from the free throw line. I'm sorry, I'm laughing reading this. He had 14 rebounds. Milwaukee won 140-126. He was absolutely dominant in this game. He is one of three players in NBA history to have 60-plus points, 10-plus rebounds, and 70% from the field. It's him, Karl Malone, who actually did that against Milwaukee, and Wilt Chamberlain. It was a truly historic, dominant performance. He broke the Milwaukee Bucks single-game record held by my guy, the lefty, smooth lefty, Brett Michael Redd. It's a great game. Also in that game, Dame Lillard passed Kyle Korver to move into fifth all-time in three-pointers. But nobody is talking about any of that stuff would happen because we had Ballgate. Apparently, Giannis, I don't know, Mikey, you can kind of chime in here when you want because I know you were watching the same feed that I was. We were actually watching it live. Game ends. Milwaukee was up by 16. They had to pull everyone pulled their starters. Well, Indiana got it to within 10. Milwaukee put their starters back in with like 2 minutes to go. Giannis got the scoring record. I mean, he already had it, but then he went up to 64. He had a dunk at the end that I don't think the Pacers really liked too much, but, you know, whatever. Mikey, you're going to have to help me with this pronunciation. Apparently, Oscar, how do you say his last name?
Stiebwe. How do you say it? Oscar Stiebwe. There you go.
Oscar Stiebwe, a rookie, nailed it. Scored on a free throw, scored his first NBA point, right? So technically, he scored a point in the in-season tournament, but that doesn't count as a regular season game. So the Indiana Pacers wanted this ball. They took it back. Giannis was incensed because he wanted the game ball. It was a big deal for him. There's a bunch of confusion right now. Nobody really knows what happened. Giannis went back to the locker room. Dame and Malik Beasley and Chris Middleton were talking to Tyrese Haliburton, who stayed on the court. Shout out to Oshkosh. He had Oshkosh North, his high school. They were all down for the game. He had about 60, 70 family members at the game. Giannis goes sprinting back to the Indiana Pacers locker room. All of a sudden, about a minute later, he comes running back. He is screaming at Tyrese Halliburton. If you can read lips, he's saying, go get my effing ball. Go get my effing ball. This is the most ridiculous thing. If you could see the video of Dame Lillard, the look on his face, he is just laughing. His post-game press conference was hilarious. I think he said something along the lines, I ain't never seen no shit like that before. Campaign was just hilarious, too. He was like, I just went following my teammate, man. He wanted that ball. The man wanted that ball. So now it comes out a day later that a Milwaukee security guard actually had the game ball. Apparently, they play with three game balls. Indiana has one. Milwaukee has one. Giannis doesn't think that he got the correct one. But it is a clusterfuck. But NBA Twitter was on fire last night. I don't know where you want to go with this. You can go with Dame. You can go with Giannis's historic performance. Or you could just talk about one of the greatest NBA Twitter nights we've seen that had nothing to do with the actual game.
Well, I mean, honestly, on this one, I think it's good that you lead the way because, like you mentioned earlier, I was at that Wizards game. So, like, I wasn't on Twitter to the extent that I normally would be. I saw what was going on. And, of course, I caught up after the game. I was sitting at Clyde's over there next to Capital One Arena.
Ooh,
having a couple drinks and some wings after the game and kind of digesting everything that happened around the NBA. It was crazy. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess where I stand on it is like, if it kind of like comes down to guy scoring his first career points, superstar getting a career high, like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't think it necessarily should go to Giannis. Like, if the whole like how many game balls there are thing like confused me, but in terms of like getting the actual ball,
so confusing.
If like Indiana just grabbed it and had it, the actual game ball, and wanted to give it to Oscar for his first NBA points, I don't see a problem with that. And like, I kind of just feel like it's beneath Giannis, or it should be beneath Giannis. Like, I think it would be a lot cooler if Giannis was like, fuck it, I don't need a ball. Like, I'm going to do this again. Or like, this is not my greatest accomplishment. Like, I just, for him to make such a big deal about it. And like, he didn't do anything terrible or like completely out of line. Like, I think we can all agree it was just kind of like a funny situation, like not super serious, but he was serious about it. And like, I just think for him to get that upset, like when you saw him screaming at Tyrese Halliburton there, like,
and Lloyd Pierce.
Yeah. Like for him to be that upset about not getting that ball from his 64, like not a great look. Like, I would have liked to have seen him just say, fuck it. Like, I don't care. Like, I think I'm above that.
I think.
Why do you care so much?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's Indiana. Yeah, I think there's a couple things that you said there. I think that if it wasn't Indiana, this isn't that big of a deal. Fair. Number two, I don't think he wanted the ball because he scored 64 points. I think he wanted the ball because he broke the Milwaukee Bucks single game for most points in a game. That's what I think he wanted to. But there are so many funny parts about this. I agree with what you said, but like, what is totally, I haven't seen anybody talk about this. I haven't even talked about this with Mikey. The Bucks had the ball. They are the team that had the ball last, and they let the clock run out, and Malik Beasley just like shot a three. It was after the buzzer, but he still shot it instead of keeping the ball. It is just a wild, wild event. But to what Mikey just said, if that's not Indiana, this isn't that big of a deal. I think that Indiana, he had the first game where Giannis, he went for over 50. They lost by two. There was no Dame Lillard. Chris Middleton was still on a minutes restriction. And Giannis kind of, it's understandable, but he played so hard. He kind of messed that game up. He had a couple bad turnovers. Then you go to the in-season tournament where I think everyone but Giannis was hungover in that game. And like, you know, Indiana is, they're a tough team. You know, we all know that they don't really play defense, but they run, they gun, and they're, you know, we had Tyrese Halliburton doing the Dame time, which was, I had no issue with it. I thought it was cool. Dame thought it was cool. And I think that Milwaukee is just a frustrated team because this fit isn't going the way that everyone, including the players, probably had hoped it was going to go. It's taking more time. So I think you couple with all that, and I know you didn't watch the game, Brett.
I did not.
Giannis, like, there's a reason he shot that many free throws. I mean, he was getting his ass kicked by everybody on Indiana. Like, he would drive, man, and it'd be elbow here, it'd be this here, this here. I mean, I love Nesmith's game, but like, and he didn't do it intentionally. Like, he tried picking him up or holding him before he did it. But Giannis went up.
And I saw that. Yeah,
he just grabbed him. No, it wasn't that dirty.
No.
It did not deserve any technical, nothing like that. But it was more so like that dude. Every time that dude went to the free throw line, it was not a ticky tack foul. Like, he was just getting his ass kicked. So I think that adds to it. You have Bobby Portis. I think that game ended with 8, maybe 9 technicals on both teams. Bobby Portis got kicked out. Like I think Milwaukee really wanted to send a message. Indiana, like, they're a team on the rise. And I think that had more to do with it than the actual, like, 64 points game ball. Because I agree with you, dude. Like, this rookie, like, let's be real, man. Like, he's going to be most famous because of this. Like, I hope that he proves me wrong. I hope he has a long NBA career. But, like, this is what he's going to be most famous by, and that's unfortunate. But that's, I agree with you, Brett, but I just think it wasn't just that. There was a lot more emotion that played into it.
The one thing I just want to clear up on the timeline a little bit, and I think, like, where it comes from with Giannis's kind of ridiculous reaction to it. Like, if you just saw his reaction, you're like, this is bullshit. Especially once you know that a security guard for the Milwaukee Bucks grabbed the ball first. But what was happening was, if you follow it in, like, real time, then you go back and, like, I watched, like, the Zapruder film breakdown of all of it, like, after seeing everything. So what happened was Giannis was on the sideline doing his typical, like, sideline interview. And by that point, it had already gotten out to the Bucks bench that the Pacers had the game ball. And at
Giannis
this point,
was not the first. Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mike. Giannis was not the first one back there. Like, he was the last one to go back there.
That's why this is important. I think that he was just confused. He didn't know they had a game ball. He didn't know that the Pacers had one, the Bucks had one. He just knew that, you know, Jay Crowder and Thanasis were in the hallway. Marjan were in the hallway arguing, you know, top of their lungs with Miles Turner and Buddy Hield. And the Pacers are not, like, without fault here. Like, Buddy Hield, you can hear on audio, he's like, keep the fucking ball, where are we keeping it, don't know, put it back. Like, it's all sorts of shit, and it's like, they were in their right to do that too. It was just a big confusion about there actually being two balls, but there was already a dispute. So I think Giannis, just like, after that game of getting, like, you know, physically the shit kicked out of him for 30 free throw attempts, he, you know, the emotions are riding high. He knew the Pacers didn't like that they were running up the score and going for that record. So he ran back there. He's confused. He can't get to the locker room. Then he comes back out and he starts yelling at Halliburton. And I think that, like, Halliburton, Dame, Middleton, Lloyd Pierce, the assistant coach of the Pacers, like, all the people who you would think to be level-headed about it were level-headed, and they talked Giannis down a bit. You could see it happen, like, in real time. But if you only went off of Giannis's, like, reaction, seeing him running and then screaming at Halliburton, you're going to be like, this guy's a fucking madman. And I think it's settled down a little bit after that.
There were a couple tweets that I screenshotted, like, just to kind of go. Yeah. Like, Justin Garcia, who's the radio guy for the Bucks, or he's the assistant radio guy, goes, Dame Lillard tells us the post game festivities were brought on by the Pacers taking the game ball, upset by Giannis scoring late. Ryan Russillo goes, love that Giannis went for 60. Don't care, it was a blowout. Nesmith chucked him to the ground, and the Bucks clearly wanted to send a message. Then you have Giannis. Players with 60-plus points this season, Giannis. Nobody else. Giannis is the fifth player in NBA history to score 60-plus points on 70-plus percent field goal percentage. But I'll ask you, who was the last person to do that?
60-plus on 70%? Clay.
Dame Lillard.
Oh, was it Dame?
Dame Lillard.
On 70%?
Yep. He was wild last year.
Was that wasn't the 70 game. Was it the 71 or the 60?
It was the 71, like, before.
Okay.
Oh, it might have been that. You're right.
Because he had the 60 like a month before.
Either way, it was last season, yeah.
So this is one of my favorite ones. Shout out to Snell Season. We're trying to get him on the pod. We'll see how that goes. He goes, wow, the great game ball debacle of 2023. I need all the angles of the post game footage. This is my Zapruder film. Was there a second basketball? Who was on the grassy knoll? Doris Burke was the second ball carrier. That one was a good one. And then this one, I'm sure, will get Bucks Twitter all wound up because 95% of them want Adrian Griffin gone. Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin says he was unaware. He was unaware of the events following tonight's game. And then magically, I don't know how he got this. Like maybe it was like Giannis's fiance that texted Chris Haynes this because Dame Lillard was still on the floor. Chris Haynes, Bucks security, was able to receive the game ball for Giannis. Before that, he said, initial explanation from one member of the Pacers to Bucks players as to why they took the game ball from Giannis was they wanted to give it to the rookie who scored his first career basket. Just an all-time Twitter night. I think even FanDuel replied back to that tweet. It said, Oscar seeing Giannis run into the locker room. And then my favorite tweet of the night goes to Campaign. Actually, there's two of them. Campaign on heading into the tunnel postgame. Man wanted that ball. I'm following my team, helping my teammate out. It was just a lot of commotion, honestly. He just wanted his ball, man. And then all of this chaos is unfolding. Brooke Lopez is in the Bucks locker room listening to Racing in the Street by Bruce Springsteen. Just an all-time Twitter night that it's a shame that no one's talking about Dame. No one's talking about how historic Giannis was. Just this stupid damn game ball, which was ridiculous from the get-go.
It's crazy. It's kind of crazy that this is, like, as far as I know, unprecedented. Like, that this situation hasn't come up before that I know of, or maybe it did just, like, pre-Twitter.
I've never known about the two game balls. You would have known about that.
Apparently there's three.
Did they actually use all three or even two in this game, or did they only use one? And if that's the case, who has the real one? And is there a way
Giannis says the ball that he has doesn't feel like a game played ball.
I laughed out loud when I read that. I don't know why that shit just got me. That was funny as hell. That's
unbelievable.
But it's just weird this hasn't happened before, that there's been like two different guys have like some super significant game for themselves, and like, you know, each one wants the game ball, and this, like, I don't know, it's like the game ball always just kind of goes to somebody, and
yeah,
like, did really I would love to know, like, did Kobe get the game ball for 81, or did like a Toronto Raptor had a rookie that scored? Like, I have no idea. Like, dude, this is fascinating.
Things were different back then. Kobe for damn sure got that right. Yeah. Like, but like, that's what it would have been like. Kind of like, imagine if some Raptors rookie like scored his first point and like Jalen Rose just like took the ball and ran back. Like, I don't know. Like, I can't imagine that happening with that. But that's kind of how it went down. So,
well, we know this for sure. The Bucks and the Pacers play two more times in just a couple of weeks, January 1st, January 3rd. The NBA is going to be pretty wise to send several balls to those games.
Giannis might score 70. He might score 70 in the next one. He's averaging 52 through three games the Pacers this season. Like, averaging. Like, he scored 54 and 64, and then I think like 37 in the other one. And I mean, the Pacers are still up 2-1 in the season series.
This is a cool side effect of the in-season tournament, that we're going to have this team play five times in like a calendar month.
Yeah,
that's like, it's unprecedented.
And you could tell, too, that Milwaukee wanted that game from the get-go. Like, they actually played defense in that game. Like, they had Tyrese Halliburton kind of fucked up a little bit. I think they started, instead of having Lopez on Turner, they moved Giannis to Turner, and it kind of messed up their screen and roll coverage a little bit.
Yeah, they switched everything.
They did. But, like, I love it, man. Like, this is what the in-season tournament is for. Like, I love that there's this rivalry. Like, I was getting hit up so many times, like, what do you think about this? I'm like, dude, I think this is hilarious. Like, everything about this is so funny. I'm not taking any sides. I thought it was ridiculous, but like, dude, it's just like, what are you supposed to do? But yeah, January 1st and January 3rd is going to be insane. Luckily for me, I get a vasectomy January 3rd, so I'm going to be doing nothing but watching this game later on that day.
Hey, congrats.
Yeah, dude, nuts are going, dude. Three kids under three, dude. Nuts, bye-bye, nuts. They're gone. They're done. But yeah, man, that was insane. And to your point, Brett, like, I think Giannis is scoring 52 against them. I really think Russillo was right. Watching that game, Milwaukee wanted to send a message from the jump. And I think all that post-game stuff, I think that's all that was. Like Mike.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, yeah, like you said, a lot of it was probably just out of frustration of like just the way things have gone between them prior to this game, and then getting hit all those times, and like, I think that makes sense. You guys kind of laid it out pretty good. I didn't have like a full understanding of the timeline and the situation. Still completely ridiculous, completely hilarious. But yeah, I think we're all going to be circling that next matchup on our calendars. It damn near feels like a playoff series with how much they've already played in the last couple weeks, and then with these next two games coming up, like, that is really cool. And yeah, it's a fun matchup. Division rivalry, gotta love it.
I love it, dude. I love everything about it. So that wasn't the only controversy that happened in the NBA yesterday. So we're recording this on a Thursday. So on Tuesday night, our everyone's favorite Golden State Warrior, Draymond Green. I don't know, man. Like, I thought that was pretty bad. I think that I know it was an open punch, but like, dude, he knew what he was doing on Nurkic there for Phoenix. So it comes out on Wednesday, actually just before the 6 o'clock game started, that Draymond Green was going to be suspended indefinitely. This is kind of unprecedented. I can't remember a thing like this where it was just open-ended. Like, he didn't get 10 games. He didn't get 15 games. I believe in Draymond Green's last 27 games going back to last year, this is the fourth kind of doing air quotes violent act that he has done that he has gotten suspended for. The last one was obviously when he choked our favorite Frenchman, Rudy Gobert. This is pretty bad, man. I mean, Brett, I want to get your thoughts on it right away. Like, I mean, are we looking at 20 games, 25 games, the whole season? Like, what do you think here?
I think that would be excessive. Even 20, I think, would be a little excessive when you look at just the precedents. Now, like, obviously Draymond has a history of this stuff. Like you mentioned, there was the stomp on Sabonis and then the choke of Gobert and then this, and not to mention all the other stuff that he's done in his career. So it's not like this is his first offense. If it was, it would probably just be like a few game suspension. So I definitely understand that. But at the same time, like to me, like 10 games feels right. Like 10 games is a lot for like something that happens on the court. That's a lot, you know. Not that many guys have been suspended 10 games for like a cheap shot or a foul or a whatever you want to call that. I don't know if I want to straight up call it a punch. It essentially was, but like, you know,
cheap shot feels fair.
Yeah. He got 5 for choking out Rudy Gobert. I think if they were to double that and say, hey, we give you 5 for the last one, we're going to give you 10 for this one. Like, that feels appropriate to me. Like, I don't think it should be any less than that, but I don't really know that it needs to be more. It's hard to argue against, like, hey, let's be a little stricter. But I just thought the wording of it, using that word indefinitely, was a little strange, because it could end up being like 5, 6, 7, 8 games. You know what I mean? Like, it might not even end up being 10.
Yeah, indefinitely sounds way harsher than 5 games.
The connotations of it, you know what I mean? Like, this could very well end up being like, I think it'll end up being more than 5 because the last one was 5, but like 6, 7, 8, he could be back somewhere in there. And so like, to use the term indefinitely when I think the likelihood is that it'll be 10 or fewer, like, why not just call it 10? I tweeted about this. That's where I'm at with it. Now, if the league really thinks, no, this needs to be more than 10, we just don't know how much more, then fine. Then I have no problem with the wording. But if it's probably not going to be more than 10, why not just make it 10? Like, the indefinitely just feels like almost like dramatic.
So you know? with Draymond, I do think there's a little bit of a special case with him where, you know, he's got a tendency to respond. I mean, he's got his own fucking podcast where he's gone on record about things that are going on with him and the team internally. So I think part of the indefinitely thing with him is they actually have right now in real time, they're giving him a chance. Like, let's see if he does anything that makes us want to be harsher about it. And he has a track record of that being the case. So I could understand it in that sense. It does feel a little bit unfair, but I mean, Draymond is absolutely a special case.
Not even unfair. Like, just like performative was the word I used when I tweeted, or like just dramatic, or like, I don't know. It feels a little like
it's extra. Phony. It's very extra. Like, yeah,
because it's not necessarily gonna be 15, 20 games. If they're thinking it's going to be right now, if they're like, oh, this is going to be at least 10. It depends how he behaves. Depends what he does. Depends what he says. Depends what, you know, counseling he goes to. Then sure. But like, I don't know, man. And just a quick to like go back to the act itself. Like, look, it was bad. Okay. But it's like, there's that little gray area, and it's kind of, it reminds me of the, when he stomped Sabonis, where he can say, I didn't mean to do that. With the Sabonis, it was like, oh, I lost my balance. We know that's bullshit. Like, we know he meant to do that, but he has that little wiggle room where he can say, oh, I just kind of lost my balance. Like, and with this, he can say, oh, I was just trying to sell a foul and I just turned around really fast. We all know it's bullshit, but it's like, it's not like what he did to Jordan Poole. Like, and I'm not saying like that's a different scenario, because that's like within the team, that's at a practice. Nobody was ever supposed to even see that tape, obviously. So I'm not saying like in the sense of how he should be punished would be akin to that. But in terms of the act itself, if he did that, if he did what he did to Jordan Poole, to Nurkic in the game, that's season, dead. Baby. That's for season.
Sure, yeah, that's,
you're done
that's,
for the season. So like, so this wasn't a punch like that, even if it's effectively almost the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So like, I think that's where like, you know, let's not act like he did to Nurkic what he did to Jordan Poole. It's different.
Steve, have you seen the Steve Kerr quote?
Well, I didn't see the Steve Kerr quote, but I saw the Mike Dunleavy Jr. quote. And Kendra Andrews tweeted this out today, that Warriors GM Mike Dunleavy Jr. says that he and Draymond Green's camp work with the league to come up with the indefinite suspension. We understand there's a punishment that will take place, but this is also about helping somebody, Mike Dunleavy Jr. said. They 100% agreed. So did Draymond. So
here's the Kerr quote. It's a little bit taken out of context, but he says, the one who choked Rudy Gobert, the one who took a wild flail at Yusuf, the one who punched Jordan Poole last year, that's the guy who needs to change. So that's very direct compared to where they've been with their, like, you know, we're going to handle this internally kind of approach they've taken in the past, where they felt like they've kind of pussyfooted around and been a little bit scared of Draymond. I think right now they're like, we need to address this. We need to be very public and forward facing about it, about the approach that we're taking, and say that this is a fucking problem. And at least that's a step. I'm not always a big believer in the way the Warriors handle things. I'm not a big believer in the way Steve Kerr handles things, but I think that direct approach is probably the only way they can get through, to say that we know our guy is a problem right now and he needs help.
I'm just wondering though, you know, coming into the season, and even after the first couple of games, I think the Warriors started 5-1. You know, Draymond was saying that it's fun to come to work again. The team is so close. Everything is going well. And then you have the Rudy Gobert. Like, Golden State is 10-13 right now. And if you watch them, they're not a good basketball team. I don't know, like, where they go from here. Not specifically talking about Draymond, but, like, if you watch that game the other night, like, Klay Thompson and Andrew Wiggins got benched. You know, there's no other way around it. Like, they got benched at the end of the game. If you kind of look at the press conference that Steve Kerr said, I mean, Steve Kerr basically was just like, he didn't say this directly, but you could tell it was like, I've given these dudes all I can right now. Like, I have to go with who's playing better. And the younger guys are clearly playing better, you know. And I think Steph Curry, some of the shots that he took in that fourth quarter was not typical Steph Curry shots, but he just knew like, hey, man, I got to put this team on my back. So right now, without Draymond, like, this is a bad basketball team. I don't know, like, I don't think they're going to make the play-in. I mean, right now, I think they're outside of the top 10 teams, right? I mean, Mikey can look that up, but I think Phoenix is maybe 13-10.
They're currently 11th.
Yeah, like, I don't know where Golden State goes this season. This type of situation with Draymond has eerily similar to Ja Morant, that situation last season, where, you know, he had to go to rehab or wherever he had to go to, and then he came back. I don't know what's going to happen with this. I don't know how long it's going to be, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is longer than 10 games.
It could be. And I just, you know, I have some questions just about that, the whole counseling approach to this kind of stuff, like in this context. Like, and I know people that are more familiar with that stuff kind of had an issue with Ja, like, hey, went to counseling for a week, now he's all better. Like, you know, I don't know that that's how it works. I don't know much about this stuff, but it just seems like anytime there's something that is kind of bad for their brand, it's like, oh, let's just send him to counseling and that'll fix everything. I don't know, man. Maybe Draymond's just kind of a hothead on the basketball court. Like, I've played against guys like that. We've seen guys like that in the NBA. Like, Bill Laimbeer did this shit all the time. Like, I know he's the name that always gets brought up, but he wasn't the only one. There was a lot of guys in the 80s and 90s that did the same shit. Like, that thing, what Draymond did to Nurkic, like, that was, like, Hakeem Olajuwon did that shit. You know what I mean? Like, that it was not that crazy back then. So, I don't know. I don't know if this is some deep thing where Draymond needs all this help. And like, he's
he might just be kind of a hothead. That's not ideal. That's not great. I don't think he's a bad person, you know, like I don't think he's that screwed up of a person. I just think when he's on the basketball court, that stuff comes out sometimes, and I'm fine with just suspending him for increasingly longer durations each time he pulls some shit like this. I know the NBA is this is just what they kind of how they approach it now is like, okay, we're going to send him to counseling. We're going to get him some help. And I don't, maybe that is what he needs. I really don't know. I'm not qualified to say that, but this stuff was not that abnormal back in the day. And those guys, like, they barely even suspended him back then. But I think now, obviously, you don't want that stuff in the game. I just think I'm kind of a fan of just straight up suspending him. Just like, don't pussyfoot around it. Don't like make it vague. Don't make it dramatic and performative. Just call it what it is. Suspend the guy for 10 games. And if he does it again after that, make it 20. And then send him a message that way. Unless you really think this guy needs help, which I don't know. But it just feels like they're just kind of leaning on that a little bit to just make things all better. He got the help he needs. Then what happens when he does it again after that? Come on.
Well, I think part of this, too, to your point, Brett, is the NBA has done this to themselves. I don't know, like, if you guys were watching on, I think it was Tuesday night, right, when Nikola Jokic got ejected from the Chicago Bulls game just for simply, I think he said to the referee something along the lines of, like, call the fucking foul, right? And they ejected him just for that. And in his post-game presser, while he did not name Draymond Green specifically, he was talking about Draymond Green when he said, kind of like, dude, you know, what the hell, man? Like, there are plenty of players, one specific one that gets away with this more than anybody else. And the NBA and the Golden State Warriors and Steve Kerr have, to your direct quote, Brad, have pussyfooted around this for a long time. I think that Draymond gets away with shit talking to the refs more than any player in the NBA. And they have kind of let this happen because it's Draymond. I'm sure, I know people don't like to hear about the conspiracy stuff, but I'm sure Golden State was a really good team, you know, and they did not want to kick one of their best players out in nationally televised games. You know, remember when he got suspended for the NBA Finals, how big of a deal that was. But I just don't understand. What I want to see with the NBA is more consistency with this stuff. You know, I don't think Nikola Jokic is a hothead, but like he's been kicked out of games twice this year already.
He's got a little something to him. I mean, my
point though is like Draymond can sit there and motherfuck a referee for 15 seconds and the referee doesn't do anything.
Oh, but he will delay the game. Like the whole game has to stop so he can yell at the ref right in their face as aggressively as imaginable. And they have, most of the time, they don't even tee him up. People are like, oh, well, he's like, how, you know, leads the league in technicals or whatever. It's like, yeah, but think of think of how often he does this. He should have 10 times as many if you're holding him to the same standards as your average player. I agree, man. Like, they're way too lenient with that. Like, there's a lot of clips that have been shared in the wake of the Jokic ejection of Draymond just going ham on refs, and they just stand there and take it. No other player could do that. And I don't know what he's done to deserve that special treatment. Like, if anything, you would think it's the opposite. Like, fuck this guy. He does this all the time. We need to put a stop to it. So I don't understand that. I'm with you, man. And I think his suspensions that he's gotten for the stuff he's done in the past have been really light. I think he got off light for that Sabonis stomp. That was horrible. Like, he's done some even the Gobert thing, like straight up putting your hands on someone's throat. Like, okay, 5 games is a lot. But like, I think he's in general gotten off really light with that stuff too. So I definitely understand wanting to like bring the hammer down, but I don't know. It just feels so vague. And I just think it could end up being like 6-7 games and then he's back. And
And that's kind of what my point was too. And I'm not trying to make light of the situation. I'm not saying this is what it is. I'm just kind of like openly questioning it, you know, like Golden State needs him. Like, they're a bad basketball team right now without him. Like, what is Draymond, is this whole thing like, all right, Steve Kerr, Mike Dunleavy Jr., Draymond, they all got together like, hey, man, the quickest way to get you back on the court is to say, like, you're going to go do this, and then we get you back sooner rather than later. Like,
That's what it is. And I don't know if I like that. I don't know. It just seems disingenuous. Like, let's just be real here, like, about what's going on. Like, I'll say this, like, the last thing I'll say about this, because I don't have much more. But Kuminga, what if he just emerges like in a major way
while it happens,
with Draymond out. Like, what if he just he's been playing well, like, but what if he just goes crazy and is like, you know, averages 20 like while Draymond's out and is playing great defense and shooting the ball well, drawing fouls, getting downhill, doing what he does. Like, what if this is like his real emergence? Because he's always been behind Draymond and everyone else, kind of, you know, but like, this is a really good opportunity for him. And I think it could end up determining a lot about the Warriors' future. I know Pajemski is starting tonight, I read, and shout out Wisconsin, baby.
Well.
So like, hey, we got a little youth movement going on, and yeah, I'm with you. I don't know that they're even a play-in team this year, but I think like this Draymond suspension could really open the door for Kuminga even more to, you know, cement his place in their future plans.
And you know what,
maybe,
Brett?
Maybe even have a bigger role the rest of this season.
The Golden State Warriors front office and their coaching staff might want that to happen. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility. Like, hey, maybe the best case scenario for us is these young guys keep playing and maybe Clay and Draymond aren't on the team next season. Like, who
knows what's gonna happen? Draymond's got 4 years on his contract still. So that complicates that.
But I think they would certainly welcome a genuine breakout by Kuminga this season. And then, hey, if Draymond fades a little bit in terms of his role going forward as he gets into his mid-30s, like, that's fine. I mean, he's obviously still going to be a very valuable player, but maybe, you know, maybe Kuminga can take some of those minutes going forward, because I still believe in that kid a lot.
Yeah, so do I. Do you guys want to do something crazy right now and talk a little quarterly MVP awards here?
Let's go.
Let's go, man. It's never too early for an MVP discussion. So, Brett, let's start with you, man. Why don't you give us your top five MVP list right now? Right now, today, Brett. I'm going to hold you to this on December 14th, 2023.
Oh, man. This one's tough. All right. So, there's four that I think for sure are in the race.
Let's see if we have the same ones.
It's the big four, and this is not in any I'll put it in alphabetical order just to avoid confusion. Embiid, Giannis, Jokic, Luka.
Okay. Not my four.
I had to think about that for
Let's
a second.
Do the fifth one, baby. Let's do the fifth one.
The fifth one is kind of a toss up for me, but I'm gonna go with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for my fifth right now. But Tatum, honorable mention. Like, they're kind of they're close, those two. But I think it's those big four, and then SGA's right there though.
I like it.
You want me to go, Steve?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Mikey. I'll go last.
All right. So we've got the same top five, Brett, but my top four is different. I'll actually go in order of how I have it ranked right now. I've got Jokic still. I think last couple weeks, you could definitely make a case for a couple other guys, but I trust it more. All the advanced stats still lead Jokic. We know what he's been doing without Murray for the majority of the season at this point. Still the best player in the league. I'm just rewarding that. I've got Joel Embiid second, and I think that's a pretty tight race right there. It feels a little boring to just be doing Jokic Embiid again, but I just think that's the way it is. I actually have SGA third. I'm between SGA and then I have Luka fourth. I really went back and forth between who I wanted third there. And then I have Giannis fifth. So we had the same top five. I think Giannis actually, he's come on really strong lately. Probably maybe his most efficient season of his career so far. And he's been offensively. And I mean, the team is not great defensively, but you can hardly put a lot of blame on Giannis for that. He's one of the few pieces holding anything together there. On the outside looking in, I've got Haliburton and Tatum. I think, you know, just as recency bias and, you know, the exciting new thing, I probably would have had Haliburton fifth maybe last week. Maybe as just like everyone else, I was in awe of the in-season tournament run. But that team is third from the bottom in defensive efficiency, and he is a big part of that. We know he's the master of the offense, but also that team is fifth in the East right now, but the record isn't that outstanding. I believe it is. Let me check it real quick. 13-9. You've got the Knicks, the Heat, the Nets all kind of closing in on them. I wouldn't be shocked if that team is more of a play-in team than it is a top contender. So I just don't think Haliburton's quite there yet. But yeah, we have the same top five.
Maybe I misunderstood the assignment. Should I put mine in order of actually how I have it?
If you want to, that's fine.
Yeah, I do. I can definitely do that. I didn't know what we were going for quite right there, but I'll put them in order. My number one is Embiid right now.
You son of a bitch. Why? You son of a bitch.
I mean, the numbers are crazy. I think the stat I posted last night is he's the first player in NBA history to average at least 33, 11, and 6 through the first 20 games of a season. He's played in 20 of 23 games for Philly, which is pretty big when you think about Embiid and all the games he's missed over the years. Like, he's played in almost every game. He's averaging almost 34, 12, 6 on the season. And Philly is 16 and 7. They were heading into tonight. I don't believe they played tonight. So, yeah, he's going to be my number one. Number two is got to be Jokic. Like, I think he's just straight up better than ever. He's played in 24, 25 games. If Denver had a little bit better of a record, he'd probably be my number one. I mean, he's unbelievable. But he'd be my number two. Luka would be my three. And these are all really close. Like, these top three, even top four especially, are super close. But yeah, Luka's averaging 32, 8, and 9. He's played in 22 of 23. Dallas, I think, will be 15 and 9. They're about to lose to the Timberwolves. But still, very successful season.
So Kyrie's missed a lot of games, too.
Kyrie's missed time. Thing about Luka is, like, he's in shape now. Like, legitimately great shape. He looks completely different physically. He's playing absolutely better than ever. He's more dangerous than ever. He would probably be my pick. Like, if we were picking who's going to win MVP at the end of the season, I think I would pick Luka. Right now, I'm going to have him third. Fourth is going to be Giannis, playing as good as ever. Like, just elite efficiency, 32, 11, and 5. Has played in almost every game. Bucks are, what, 17 and 7? So, he's right there with those other three. And then, yeah, SGA would be the next one. SGA is doing it on both ends. He's leading the league in steals by far, averaging 36 and 6, played in 21 of 22 games. OKC is probably overachieved, I think, in the minds of most people. They're 15 and 7. They're right there in the mix. But it's just funny, like, looking at all these candidates, like that five that I just mentioned, how similar they are in so many ways. Like, the team records are all right in the same ballpark. Their numbers, when you look at kind of the totality of the counting stats, are all in the same ballpark. They've all been really durable. None of them has missed more than three games. The rest have all missed just one. So, like, it's really close, and it feels like a five-man race. And I don't know. I mean, I really don't think we can count out Tatum. Like, Boston's the best team of all these, obviously. His numbers are at 27, 9, and 4 heading into tonight are like a slight step down from the other guys, but he hasn't missed a game and he's been outstanding. And like, I just wonder, like, does he ever win an MVP? Like, if he doesn't win it this year, like, is he ever gonna have like the crazy enough numbers to overcome one of these other guys that are about his age and win one?
Aren't like gaudy enough. I do want to say real quick, just when you're talking about counting stats with those top five guys, SGA, I think, probably stands out to some people as being like, he's not that dude. If you just look, I think he's like 38 and 6, something like that. But like you said, leads the league in steals. His advanced numbers pop off. He's third in PER behind Embiid and Jokic only. His true shooting percentage is 64%. Leads the league in steal percentage. If you dig deeper on some of his stats, defensively, he contests the most shots of any player in the league. And I believe he's at like the second best defensive field goal percentage. Like, players shoot like 39% against him. I haven't looked recently, but you couple that with how efficient he is offensively and the fact that the Thunder, like, a legit contender right now.
They're the two seed guys. They're the two seed in the West.
Two seed. And I think for him to have an argument at the end of the season, like, to be like, oh, this guy is actually MVP, they have to be like the clear front runner, number one seed in the West. Like, it's kind of a long shot. But just comparing like him and Luka in comparison to each other, it's like Luka has those basic counting stats that like blow you away. SGA has all of the advanced stats to back him up. And it's kind of jaw dropping when you really dig deep.
Okay. Yeah. So here's what I got. I got something similar. Thank you, Brett, for stealing my thunder. I have Joel Embiid as the MVP right now. I mean, in the
MVP last year, it's not that crazy.
Well, it's weird. It doesn't feel like it though. Like the way, honest, for real though. Like,
but Brett, to your point, people talk doesn't about feel like that because if you listen to any podcast or go on social media, literally the first thing you think of is Philly. It's talked about as Tyrese Maxey, Nick Nurse, and then Joel Embiid. Right, like Philly right now has the best plus minus in the entire NBA at plus 9.2. Like this team is humming along. And just to let everybody know, in the month of December, Giannis is averaging 40 points a game, 11 rebounds per game, 6.2 assists per game, while shooting 69.6% from the field. Joel Embiid is averaging 40.8 points per game, 12.3 rebounds per game, 5.3 assists per game, and is shooting 61% from the field. Like, I don't think it gets talked about enough how effing good Joel Embiid is. Like, he's having, I think, an even better year than last year with roster turnover, right? Like, we don't talk about that a lot. James Harden isn't there. Tyrese Maxey is taking this jump. They have a brand new coaching staff and Nick Nurse. Like, it's really Joel Embiid that is it. And similar to my number two, I do not have Nikola Jokic. I have Luka. Because as for the things that we kind of talked about, Brett, like Kyrie Irving has missed a ton of time. He's playing with Derek Lively, who's a rookie. Like, if Luka does not play, like, this team kind of just falls apart. And he has them, what, third or fourth in the West right now? Now, again, we're doing this on December 14th. Like, a lot of this stuff can change. I have Jokic as my third. I have SGA as my fourth. And I have Giannis as my fifth. And I just want to say, like, I really wanted to put this next person in the top five. I don't think it's going to happen, so I would have him six right now. LeBron fucking James, man, is 39 years old. I know, like, we make fun of it a lot. It's year 21. But what this dude is doing right now has never been done in the history of the NBA. Like, it is insane. Like, and you watch him. Like, he looks like he's 30 years old out there. Now, maybe he doesn't have the same burst, but the way his mind is working and, like, I'm just telling you, like, if you don't watch a lot of Lakers basketball or you don't want to, just watch LeBron James play. The dude is he's a cyborg. Like, that's not a real human being to be doing what he is doing at 39 years old. Like, it is just bizarre to me how good this dude is and how good he has done it for so long, right? Like, if you watch the in-season tournament games, like, that dude wanted it. Like, he's unbelievable, man. He's unbelievable. He's averaging 34 minutes a game. 34 minutes a game at 39 years old.
Yeah, that's going to hopefully they can get that down a little bit here coming into the second half of the season. Like, I would say, like, right now, if the season ended today, like, he's all NBA second team at the very least. So, like, absolutely would be top 10 for me in MVP. And would it be fair to say that he looks better than he has since at least the championship season?
The Cleveland championship or the
no, Lakers? Well, the Lakers, yeah, oh, no, gotcha. Right? With LeBron, it's like which one, but like I would say, like, and I would say at least since that 2019-20 season, like I think he looks better than he has the last couple seasons for sure, which is just crazy. Like, he looks more athletic almost, and like, and then just, yeah, his game is so sharp. He's obviously shooting the ball better than he has in his entire career, you know, from two and from three, I believe. Like career highs or somewhere thereabouts. So, like, yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, just completely, truly, truly unbelievable. Like,
it is, man. And I would have, though, like, I know you mentioned Tatum. Like, Tatum is really, really good. This isn't to take anything away from him. I just think that we did a podcast. What was that? I think we did a couple podcasts ago, and you had asked me who was, like, the second best player, the most important. I think it was something along those lines, man. And it is clearly Kristaps Porzingis. I think I said Jrue Holiday at the time. Like, watch Boston play without Porzingis, yeah, and it's a completely different team. When he is out there, like, this team just fires on all cylinders. They're the best team in the NBA, Brett, as you said. But, like, after LeBron, or maybe it might even be a fight for LeBron, I got Devin Booker, man. Like, that dude is just fucking unbelievable. I know that they got KD. I know that they got Bradley Beal. They played their first game together last night.
What do you mean? Kind of, yeah.
They kind of have Bradley Beal. Like, he's hardly been there.
Yeah, that is true. It took me a minute to think about that. Shut up. I'm tired. But, like, Devin Booker he's just so valuable to this team. His PER this season is 25.4. Like, he does so many things for this team. He is essentially their point guard. Like, I don't think that gets talked about enough. Like, he is the point guard of this team. He's got the ball in his hands. He is the engine that is making everybody run. I didn't have him in my top five because I don't think he's played enough games. I know he had
kind of the
ankle injury there, but like, if he played enough games, like, I don't know if it would either be Giannis or SGA that wouldn't be there, because Devin Booker, man, when that dude plays, dude, he's a top five player, man. Like, I'm sorry. Like, he is really, really freaking good. He's unbelievable. Yeah,
if he had played, like, you know, the full amount of games or only missed one or two he'd up until right this there. Point, he'd be in that, like, toss-up five range probably with, like, SGA, Tatum. Like, yeah, and I'm fine with throwing LeBron in that mix too. So that pretty much kind of rounds out our top tens even, probably.
Yeah, we came close. I feel like we mentioned eight or nine guys. So kind of venturing more into, like, all NBA team territory here. But we talked about LeBron. I do want to give a quick shout out to Anthony Davis too, who I think, like, health-wise is the only thing that ever holds him back. He's been healthy this season. He would be, if we did all NBA teams, he'd be second team all NBA right now as well. And that kind of hurts LeBron's case a little bit towards the, like, MVP conversation when you have two top 10 guys.
AD might win defensive player of the year. Like,
that's the big deal. Yeah.
It's probably him. What if you do if you did top three right now, it'd be what in any order, Anthony Davis, Bam, and Rudy. Like, that's who it would be, right?
I'd vote AD right now.
So Brett, kind of give me your talks about or your thoughts about Zion here. He got a lot of criticism from the media about him being overweight. We all heard the Stephen A. Smith stuff. I think Ryan Russillo had a pretty good breakdown of, like, he watched him play in that in-season tournament game against the Lakers. Like, something's not right. He doesn't look right. He's going to score 30 like next week. Everyone's going to get hype about it, but like, there's something going on here that's bigger than basketball. Maybe I don't want to assume anything like that, but like, why do you think, like, this dude cannot get his body right and cannot play consistently enough for what his expectations are?
I mean, I think his diet is probably just crazy. Like, if you think about, like, to stay heavy like that when you're playing an NBA schedule, going to NBA practices, working out with an NBA team, like, when you're living that life and to still stay heavy like that, like, his diet must just be crazy. So I think that's what it comes down to, is the man just loves to eat. And like, yeah, that Lakers game was interesting because it was like this juxtaposition between him and LeBron, where you have this 39-year-old guy that's just in like peak conditioning and super fast and flying around the court. And then you have Zion, who's 23 and just looks heavy and not super explosive and all that. But so that was kind of wild. And that I think that for a lot of people is kind of what, like, set off all this criticism, was just like seeing him on the court on that stage. But at the same time, man, like, at what point do we just accept that Zion's heavy and just say, yeah, he's still a great player. This is who he is. This is what he is. He's just a heavy dude. There's probably some areas where it works to his advantage on the court. Like, unless we think he's going to get back to Duke Zion, like everybody talks about, like, oh, I miss Duke Zion. Okay, that guy's probably not coming back. He's probably never going to weigh what he did at Duke again. And like, how long is it going to be before we just accept that, so we can kind of appreciate him for the player that he is and not have to like always be talking about his conditioning and his weight? Now, if it's leading to injuries, and he has obviously had injury problems, if that keeps happening and there's a clear causation between his weight and the injuries, that's one thing. But like, if he's healthy, as he's been this season for the most part, and playing and putting up 25-6-6 or whatever he's averaging, like, so what? He's heavy. Like, are we going to do this with every player? Like, oh, he needs to get better at this. He needs to get, like, I just think at some point, like, we kind of should just accept players for who they are as players and who they are physically. And hey, if so-and-so gets in great shape, like Luka did, like, that's awesome. That takes him to another level. Or if so-and-so revolutionizes their game and becomes this awesome, like Brook Lopez. But that stuff is uncommon. That guys don't
change their bodies that dramatically that often. Guys don't reinvent themselves as players that dramatically that often. So I just think the safe bet is kind of like, hey, accept these guys for who they are. Accept Zion for just being a heavy dude and a badass motherfucker on the court. Like, okay, he could be a little bit better if he took conditioning more seriously, but he hasn't, you know, gotten to that level. And maybe he will, maybe he won't, but he's still an awesome player. He came out and scored, what, 36 on 17 shots or something like
that? Yeah, against Minnesota, too.
In the way, against the best defense in the league, he looked awesome. And so he is awesome. And I just think we get too caught up in this criticism of him. Like, I've definitely gotten too caught up in it, for sure. And I think everybody kind of does. And it's like, it kind of takes away. Like, we don't even really appreciate him as a player, because it's always like, oh, yeah, but, you know, he used to be so much skinnier. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of tired of that. And I'm at the point where I'm just going to accept him. Yeah, he's this heavy dude. He's awesome. He's like this 6'6", 300-pound dude that's just, like, unguardable out there. Like, I don't know. I think he rules.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. I think that part of it is he played 85 games. He got a five-year, $231 million extension. We've heard from the second that New Orleans drafted him that he didn't want to be there. Clearly, there's something going on there. And I don't want to go so far as to say he won't be on the team next season. I think that's too much of a hot take, but I think there is some smoke there. You know, part of the reason why the media was even talking about this is New Orleans Pelicans reporter Christian Clark had said, like, that the team themselves is upset with him. Just a quote that he had in his article that he wrote: "The Pelicans have repeatedly stressed to Williamson that his diet and conditioning needs to improve. Williamson, multiple team sources have told the Times-Picayune, doesn't listen." So, like, it's clear that the Pelicans are frustrated with him. And it kind of seems like, to me at least, like, I don't think Zion really wants to be there. Now, that's not necessarily, I don't want to say, like, that's a cop-out, but, like, something's got to change there. And I'm with you, Brett. Like, at some point, we have to just ignore the expectations, right? We have this in the NFL all the time. It's a big talking point in the NFL. Like, it doesn't matter where you got drafted. Can you play or can you not? Like, all right, like, Zion has a five-year, $231 million contract. Is he going to live up to that? Probably not. Like, that's just the realistic, let's be real about it, right? Like, he has not played since he has been drafted. He has not played a lot of basketball. It's just a fact. So, like, to your point, enjoy the highs. There's going to be a lot of lows, and just deal with it. But, like, I really wonder, though, if next season, you know, when we're doing a preview pod, if Zion Williamson is on the Knicks, right? Like, or if he's on a team that is not the Pelicans. I think that's in real play here, because this is not the first time we have heard or a report has come out that the Pelicans themselves, that team, has had problems with Zion's weight.
Yeah. Ah, man. And, you know, I think there's a lot of nuance here that it would take a long time to really get into all of it. But I do think an important thing is, like, just specifically around the injuries, because you're right, he's missed a ton of time. Like, he's barely played, you know, what, two full seasons worth of basketball or something like that in the 5 years he's been in the league. Like, he's, I don't know what his total games played is at right now, but it's probably like under 150. So that's a problem. And so I think, like, more so than the weight, because I think he's just a heavy dude and he's just going to be in that 300-pound neighborhood, which I think he probably is right now. He's probably right around there. I think he's going to be around there, 280, 300, whatever, 270, 290, somewhere in there his whole career. But when it comes to the injuries, I think his rehab is somewhere that, and I have no idea, but I'm inclined to think, like, even more so than his weight, maybe some of the injury problems have been from him not taking his rehab specifically from those injuries, like, seriously enough, like, maybe not going 100% in his rehab. And that's why they kind of keep happening. Like, that, to me, if that is the case, would be a bigger deal than the fact that this guy's just always going to be playing at 280 plus. So I think as long as he can stay healthy, and that's like a big if, I'm not as worried about the weight. And I just, based on the injuries he's had, I don't know how much causation is there really. It's natural to think that there is, and there may be, but again, like, I think as long as he's attacking the rehab from injuries and taking care of his body in that sense, doing the proper strengthening and stretching, like, the diet might just not be great. It'd be cool if he could do like the Luka thing, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
It might just be a different situation too, man. Like it really, really might. Like what I said when we were talking before, like it seemed like the second that he got drafted there, he didn't want to be there. And there was just kind of like this smoke, right? Whenever there's smoke, there's fire. And it started off kind of soft. Remember when he was rehabbing? He was out for that year. He wasn't even in New Orleans. He was in Portland at the Nike headquarters. Just he was rehabbing there, had zero contact. I mean, and if you look at his numbers, like he's averaging 22 points a game, 5 rebounds a game, 4.8 assists a game on 57% shooting. Like his numbers are fine. But like I said, man, like I don't know if he's ever going to be able to live up to that contract in New Orleans. I just think a change of scenery might be best, man. Like seriously.
I mean, you can't rule it out. I don't, that's hard to say. I just think like he might live up to that contract. If he can stay healthy, I think he will. But can he live up to what he could be? You know, like his ceiling. Will he ever hit his ceiling? The guy he could have been if everything went right and he did everything right, you know, coming out of college. That's probably what he's not going to live up to. But, and I think that's what we just have to accept. And that was a good analogy about the draft picks. It was like, yeah, like people will hold that pick number over these guys' heads. It's like, okay, who cares? Don't think of him as the number, whatever guy you're talking about, but like, don't think of him as the number 4 pick anymore. Don't think of him as the guy that was drafted 4th. Think of him for what he actually is right now as a player. And like, don't hold him to that standard. And I think kind of with Zion, it might be unfair to hold him to his own ceiling, because I don't think that's realistic at this point of like the guy that we thought he was going to be, like MVP. Maybe he gets there, but I think he's a damn good player, an all NBA caliber player, as long as he can stay healthy.
I agree, man. And I just think there's something like to what you said. I think there's something just a little bit underwhelming about it, but I'm rooting for him, man, because the game of basketball is good when Zion is good. Like it really is. Really, really is.
He's such a unique player. He's a very, very, there's nobody else like him. That's what I appreciate about him. Like a lot of that is his size and his strength. And obviously with the quickness and everything still, like it's kind of fun to watch a guy that size do what he does. He's one of one, man. So I'm just going to enjoy him and hope he stays healthy.
I love it. I love it, man. Well, dude, this was a banger as usual. We're going to get out of here with that. For myself, the king, the Twitter NBA king himself, Brett Usher, and producer Mikey, we will see you guys next week. Peace. Bucks and six. We'll be right back.